Welcome to the Natural Medicine Healing and Wellness Summit, your guide to feeling younger, reversing disease, and living better now. My name is Dr. Michael Murray, and I'm your host for today, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be with J.J. Virgin today, someone who has an important message for all of us, especially those of us who may be struggling with weight loss. So welcome, J.J. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
J.J. Virgin is a four-time New York Times bestselling author. Some of her books include the J.J. Virgin's Sugar Impact Diet book and cookbook. J.J. specializes in weight loss resistance related to food intolerance and has helped hundreds of thousands of people finally lose the weight and feel better fast. She shows people how to identify sneaky sugars, crush sugar addiction, and shift from a sugar burner to a fat burner. She speaks at major integrative medical and consumer conferences, as well as appears regularly in the media, including on Dr. Oz, Rachel Ray, and The Today Show. JJ is a board-certified nutrition specialist, board-certified in holistic nutrition, and a certified nutrition and fitness specialist. JJ's talk today is entitled, Drop 7 Foods, Lose 7 Pounds, Just 7 Days, How Food Intolerance is the Real Cause of Weight Gain. That's going to be fascinating, but before we go there, JJ, I read your story on your website, and I got to tell you, I was really moved, and I think it says a lot about you and what motivates you. I'd like to hear how you are motivated in your life to make a difference in the lives of others.
You know, I think what's motivated me most is something that happened 3 years ago to my family when my son was the victim of a hit and run and left for, he was crossing the street and he was left for dead in the street. And had he not, before the accident, had he not been on fish oil and supplements and been in really good health, and then after the accident, you know, while he was in a coma and then while he was in the hospital for 4.5 months and over the last 2.5 years after that, we've been doing lots of really great nutrition and fitness and all sorts of integrated approaches to him. And it made me realize that this is such a critical topic that, you know, for so many people, they look at nutrition and they think, oh, it's about losing a couple pounds or having more energy, but it really isn't. It's so much bigger than that. When you look at what we're doing in the world, for so many people, what's holding them back in life and really living their life full out and living their purpose is their health. And it can be so simple to make these shifts that can make a massive change that can allow you to really go out and live the life you live. So now seeing my son going to, he's living in Utah, he's got a job, he's got an internship, watching him thrive when the doctors literally told me to let him die has become a massive source of inspiration for me just to get this message out there in a much bigger way.
Yeah, I cried reading the story. I think anyone who has any kids would be really, really touched by it. And there were a couple of other little messages in your story that really struck me. One was you talked about you reaching out, and you have a quote here, when we take the chance to be vulnerable, unbelievable things happen. I think that really hit me really strong.
You know, it's tough to ask for help, but when your kid's life is on the line, you do a lot of things you never thought you would do. And one of the things that I did was send an email out and go on Facebook and all the social networks and said, this is what's going on and I'm not looking for sympathy, I'm looking for support. And it was so incredible what happened. I mean, I had Dr. Daniel Amen and his wife bringing food to the hospital and Dr. Hyla Cass coming in and literally making me organic homemade chicken soup with kale and just all this incredible help. And then people sending so much energy and healing energy. And the biggest takeaway for that was, it was a massive reason that Grant got better, but I also believe that everybody who helped got better too, because it made them. I realized that when I can go out and help someone, the gift back to you is tenfold.
Absolutely.
So, but you also have to be able to receive. And that was my big lesson, is I've always been a comfortable giver and not a comfortable receiver. And life doesn't work that way. You got to go both ways, right?
Yeah, I'm glad there's a happy ending to it. And I think for the viewers, the message is, if you need help, you have to reach out. There are people out there who really want to help you. And that one thing that I've enjoyed about interviewing some of these top experts, many who I know very, very well, I know how compassionate and caring they are, and they're really wanting to help people. Us as health advocates, we want to help people get healthier. And I love the last part of your message was that you are worth it and you are worthy. And we have this one body to nurture and feed right. Let's do it right. So with that said, I'm just going to pass it on to you to talk a little bit about your thoughts on how we can help people lose those 7 pounds.
You know, you just brought up you are worth it and you are worthy. And I think before you even go into, okay, I need to lose 7 pounds, you have to actually start from a place of self-love, because I think so many people go into weight loss in this place of I'm not good enough and self-loathing. And the minute you start there, you'll start to sabotage yourself as you improve. So if we come from a place of you're awesome right now, right? But now we're going to work on your body and how to get you more energy, how to get you feeling better, how to get you better focus, and how to get you to lose weight effortlessly. So this isn't your hobby. One of the things that breaks my heart is seeing people try so hard to lose weight, to get healthier, and failing because they're just following the wrong advice. They're following the wrong set of rules. And so that's basically been my life's mission for 30 years, was to figure out, to crack that code, to figure out what it was. And it literally, while there's all these factors like stress and sleep and gut dysbiosis, all these things play a massive role. I find the fastest way to make a shift is by what you're eating. But it's different than what people think. And I think it probably most of the people listening, and I know everybody who's appearing on this summit is in that same mindset of it's not where the calories, it's not the calorie count, it's where those calories come from. And that food is information. And that even if you're eating, you know, a very small amount, if it's the wrong food, or even if you're eating no calorie things like artificial sweeteners, they can trigger a response in your body that makes you hold on to or gain weight. So we really have to move away from that old bank account model of weight loss, right? That makes me crazy because I saw it fail years and years and years, and people get so frustrated and give up on themselves, into a model of looking at our body as a chemistry lab. And how do we optimize that so we easily burn fat, we have great energy and focus, and we actually start to de-age?
I love that. So for those people that maybe have not heard that term, that losing weight is like a bank account, explain what you mean by that and how you view a better approach.
Okay, so the old model of weight loss that I hope we can just, let's just blow it up right now if it's not been blown up already in your mind, is that in order to lose weight, you need to eat less and exercise more. And I still hear this everywhere, because you have to create this caloric deficit. The new model is to look at, and again, not just food, but also your sleep, your stress, how you exercise. Look at all of those things as information. And you want to make sure that the messages you're sending to your body through all of these different things is telling your body to, hey, burn fat for fuel, right? Build muscle, hold on to muscle. And this is so critical, because if you look at the classic way that we treat our bodies in order to lose weight, it actually has the different message. The classic way that we've taught people to lose weight is to really shrink your calories, which means you're going to lower your fat intake. And we know fat can be one of the most important things that you put into your diet as you want to lose weight, that you need fat to burn fat and improve satiety and to reduce inflammation, the right type of fat, and then to do loads of exercise. We know loads of exercise, especially the wrong stuff, can be seriously stressful to your body, can help you burn up muscle tissue, which is what you don't want to do, and make you hungrier. So I'm not saying no exercise, and I'm not saying you can eat whatever, you know, however much you want, but it's really the right balance of protein and fats and slow, low carbs that are high, high, high in fiber, and the right type of exercise that makes all the difference.
And you make food intolerance a big focus of your program. And This may be a new term for people, or a new concept for many. So explain what is a food intolerance and how it contributes to weight gain.
You know, I didn't realize how key it was. Really, my clients showed me. What happened was I was teaching a course for doctors around the country called Overcoming Weight Loss Resistance. And one of the issues in there that I talked about was food sensitivity or food intolerance. And I was helping them do a test in their office that looked at food intolerance. And you can become intolerant to a food due to, you know, it's either genetics, things like gluten intolerance or lactose intolerance or hormonal issues due to a high sugar, high carb diet or stress, or due to your immune system. And there's these things like peanut allergies. Okay, those are things that you were born with, but or you can acquire. But the more common thing is not a food allergy. It's a food intolerance or food sensitivity. And this is due to your gut becoming leakier. Your small intestine should be semi-permeable. So you eat your food, you digest it well, and then your body can use it. But if your gut's more permeable, what happens is you don't, first of all, chances are you're not digesting your food well, you're not chewing enough, you're having too many liquids, you don't have enough stomach acid, and then particles are getting into general circulation that shouldn't be. Your body launches an immune attack against them, sees them as foreign invaders, and forms these immune complexes. And if it was just a little bit, you'd get rid of them. But as you have a buildup of these, you get a buildup of symptoms. And these can be things like fatigue, headaches, paradoxically craving the very food that's hurting you, joint pain, autoimmune disease, gas and bloating, appetite, inability to lose weight. And so many of these things are things that we see as normal. You know, it's just normal to be tired in the afternoon. It's just normal to be gassy and bloated. You know, it's normal to have cravings, when in reality, these can be signs of this food intolerance. And what I found was we'd send clients home, they do this food sensitivity test, you know, the same foods always showed up. The same things always showed up. So we'd pull them out, and it was crazy because they came in because of all those symptoms I just talked about. They come in with joint pain or headaches or skin problems, and they'd have weight loss as a side effect. And I thought, my gosh, what if we just use this as the cornerstone of a weight loss program? And what's great is it allows you to connect the dots between what you're eating, how you feel, and what you weigh. And really, your own body is the best way to test, because there's no single test that looks at immune problems and hormonal issues and genetics. And so, and I don't believe we even know all the ways to look at how our body's reacting to food at this point. Why not just use your own chemistry lab and see how you feel, right? And if you go back, because I've had people go, oh, you know, I did all the testing and gluten, I don't have any kind of gluten intolerance. Yet when they pull it out and they go back and retest, I mean, 90% of the people who I've worked with, when they go back and challenge gluten, they notice that they don't feel as good. Their fingers swell, they get a headache, they're fatigued. So, like, who cares what a lab test says if your own body says no, right? Don't do it.
Right. I love that. Yeah. So, so you just pretty much answered the next question I was going to ask, is how do you know if you're intolerant? And the answer is by paying attention to what's going on in your body when you eat a food. But it sounds like we need to have an elimination phase where we're not eating those foods on a daily basis in order for us to re-challenge. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to call, when I first wrote The Virgin Diet, I wanted to call it a detox, because that's what I felt like it really was. You're, you know, these foods that you hurt, that hurt you, you actually crave. And they're the things you're eating every day. And so often they're foods that we've heard are healthy for us, so we're actually making an attempt to eat them every day. Things like tofu and whole grain bread and soy milk and Greek style yogurt. And then we start to crave these things. And what you have to do is you have to pull all the potential intolerances out, because if you leave one in, you'll keep having those reactions. You pull them all out, and it's really like a washout phase or a reset where you get them out. And you find your new normal. You know, for so many of us, normal is getting up, staggering out of bed, your knees hurt, or your back hurts, you pop some Advil, you go have some coffee, you have something, you know, a little muffin or something because you need something to boost your energy, you crash a couple hours later, you know, then you have to take some kind of laxatives because nothing's moving. And this is like, people go, oh, this is normal. Like, go look at the pharmacy and see what all the drugstores are selling. It's like painkillers, laxatives, right? You know, heartburn medication.
Yeah, that doesn't sound normal to me. That sounds terrible.
It doesn't sound normal, but, you know, if you don't know otherwise, you go, oh, yeah, it's normal to get sick every couple months. It's normal to have gas. I'm like, no, it's not normal. It's your body crying out for help. So what we have to do is track your symptoms at the beginning. Let's look at all those things, give you a washout period. Now let you see, here's what normal really feels like. Normal really feels like great energy all day long, no gas and bloating, easy elimination, your joints don't hurt, that's your new normal. Then one by one, you can go and see, how you feel when you try these foods. And what's so cool about that is it changes your relationship with foods. You know, you connect the dots between what you're eating and how you feel and what you weigh. And if you say, wow, when I have dairy, my skin breaks out, or when I have eggs, my weight goes up 3 pounds, it's a whole different conversation. You'll never go, can I just have a cheat day? Because you know, why would you, why, if you knew that you were going to eat something and it would have your knees aching for 2 days, why would you want to do it, right? You wouldn't do it. That would be silly. So it's very empowering. And that's what I love the most about it.
Absolutely. And people can be their own detective. So what are some of the common foods that people are allergic to? I assume the things that they're eating.
Yes. So it generally is the foods that you're eating every single day, and often because you've heard they were healthy. And these were the most common ones that I found. These were the groups. And, you know, gluten, which now is in so many darn things. And the challenge with gluten is it can make your gut leakier so that you become more intolerant to all these other things. So gluten's one, dairy's one, soy's one, corn, eggs, peanuts, and then sugar and artificial sweeteners, which I lump together. Now, that's sugar and artificial sweeteners are kind of in a different group because it's really much more about how they impact your immune system and what they do to your hormones and your gut. But I had to include them in. I mean, real food sensitivities are much more those first six.
Yeah, I don't know any diet out there that's really telling people to eat more sugar now. Even the new dietary guidelines are saying, yay, enough with the sugar.
Thankfully, my gosh. But it is something still that I find we have to talk about, because the challenge is there's so much confusion around sugar. I mean, I wrote the Virgin Diet and then I wrote the Sugar Impact Diet, because the biggest question people asked after the Virgin Diet was all around sugar, because there's still this confusion. I mean, it just came up yesterday. I was somewhere and someone said, well, I'm having honey because it's natural. And I'm like, well, there are a lot of natural things out there like arsenic that we wouldn't be going for, you know? So there's still this confusion around sugar about, well, it's all natural, or artificial sweeteners don't have calories, so they're okay. So I still think it needs to be addressed. And, you know, understanding that carbohydrates will turn to sugar, it's really a question of how much work your body has to do to make them do that. And you want your body to have to work super hard to turn them into sugar.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about artificial sweeteners, because no one else has really talked about it on this summit. And the research shows that when people substitute artificial sweeteners for the sugar, they end up gaining more weight. That's one issue. And the other thing is that these artificial sugars, these sweeteners, have all sorts of side effects. There's concern about their long-term use. And yet people believe that by consuming these things, because they'll have fewer calories. So what's your take on artificial sweeteners, and what are some options for people that are looking for non-calorie sweeteners?
Oh, thank you. I love to go on the artificial sweetener rant.
Yeah.
So you're better off having a regular soda than an artificially sweetened diet soda. I mean, that's how bad they are. They should be banned. They are the science experiment gone wrong. If you look at why we brought them in so that diabetics could use a sweetener without having a problem. Yet now we see that people who use artificial sweeteners, even just a soda a day, have a higher risk. I think it was one diet soda a day was a 33% increased risk in diabetes. And the people who had a diet soda a day had an inch higher waist circumference than the people who had a regular soda. Now, is that cause and effect, or is it the diet soda syndrome where you have a diet soda and think you can have the cookies? I don't know, but I do know this stuff. Number one, that artificial sweeteners, this one was done on sucralose, actually changed the gut microbiome in 7 days. That is crazy. It changed your gut microbiome so that it was more glucose intolerant, so it couldn't handle sugar as well, which means higher fasting blood sugar is going to trigger higher insulin, which is going to make your body store fat, not burn it. And that higher insulin is going to cause that fat to be stored around the waist, which is what those studies were showing. So to me, it says there's something biochemical going on there, but there's also the psychological impact of when you eat sweet, what do you want more of?
You want more sweet.
Because we have these taste buds. And when these taste, I think we dull our sweet tooth when we have these artificial sweeteners so that we can no longer appreciate the natural sweetness of a blueberry or cinnamon or vanilla. And now we want progressively sweeter and sweeter foods. It makes me crazy when I see these artificial sweeteners in kids' foods. I mean, oh my gosh, we exposure equals preference. We are destroying their ability to discern natural sweetness. And then there's the calorie dysregulation piece of it, where they did the study on, I guess it was some kind of a rodent, a rat or a mouse. And first they fed them sugar water and let them eat what they needed to maintain, and they ate what they needed to maintain their weight. Then they gave them artificially sweetened water, aspartame, and they ate what they needed to maintain their weight. And then they went back to sugar water and overate because they lost that ability to correlate the degree of sweetness to the amount of calories. And so, you know, there's just, I can't think of one positive thing that you can say about artificial sweeteners. And it goes back to this fallacy of thinking that if there's no calories, it doesn't cause weight gain. Well, you know what? Stress can cause weight gain. There's no calories in that. Lack of sleep can cause weight gain. There's no calories in that. So there's a lot more to your whole weight gain issue than just a calorie. There's so much more.
Tell me how many times that you've heard this. A female patient says, it seems as if I just look at food, it goes right to my hips.
We know that actually, if you just look at food, that you can raise insulin in response to it. So yes, you're right. So stay out of that bakery. No, it's not okay just to look.
And what do you think about the like the polyols and stevia and monk fruit and those sort of natural sweeteners? What's your take on those?
I have four of those that I'm cool with, but there's a caveat with those. So stevia, monk fruit, xylitol, and erythritol, if you're going to use a sweetener, those are my sweeteners of choice. But here's the thing. You're still going to get some calorie dysregulation in there, that phenomenon I just talked about, and you're still going to make your body want more sweet. So what I teach people to do if they have a sweet tooth is a couple different things. One I grabbed from Donna Gates, I always have to give her credit on this one, is she said, JJ, sour takes people's sweet tooth away. So what I teach people to do is something I call lemonade, which is get some lemon juice, a couple tablespoons of lemon juice, water, and some glutamine, which can help with cravings because it kind of tricks your brain into thinking you had some protein. And throw in some chia seeds or some fiber in there and have that about a half an hour before a meal, because the sour is going to help with the sweet tooth, and it helps with lemon juice helps regulate blood sugar. And then the fiber is going to help you with filling, being filled up. If you need a little sweetener, throw in either the stevia, the xylitol, erythritol, or monk fruit. But what I try to get people to do is focus then on their meals, getting in good healthy fats, getting in good protein, and getting in slow, low, high fiber carbs, small amounts. And then really using savory, sea salt, spicy, starting to retrain their taste buds while they're tapering down the sweet. But I always like to crowd out. You know, I think if you just, okay, no more sweet, they're going to go, right? But you say, okay, now we're going to start getting more fat, which can also trigger that same, you know, that same little reward center in the brain. So we'll get some fat in there and some protein. I think for a lot of women, they've tried to cut their fat down, which is the worst thing they could possibly do. They eat this, you know, they go more plant-based, but they kind of get confused there and end up eating too many carbohydrates, not enough protein and fat. And so they're a sugar burner, always craving sugar, and that's where they get in trouble. So I find that if most people optimize protein, bump up their fat, and start getting in some cool spices, they start to get rid of that sweet tooth. And then some of it's kind of now starting to just taper down the sweet.
Yeah, I love for people to spice things up and add more herbs to their diets. One thing that I've noticed as I've gotten older is I seem to be gaining an even higher affinity towards bitter foods. Things that I'm kind of liking the bitter foods more than I am the sweet foods these days.
I definitely don't like the sweet. I was raised, I do not have the sweet gene because I've done the genetic testing. I'm one of those super tasters. But my adopted mom was a sugar addict. I was literally raised on Captain Crunch and Pop-Tart, right? You know, but I can't stand that stuff now. It's like, oh, it's just definitely don't have the sweet. And when I took people through the sugar impact diet, my big belief was that you could lose your sweet tooth, even if it was genetic, you could dull it down and reclaim your sugar sensitivity. And I found that you could do that literally in 7 days. I mean, it was a quick shift. And it's just because we got sweet in so many things that we're eating, like the salad dressings. And it's so many places that you would never expect it sneaking in. And it just keeps your sweet tooth on alert, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it, like you said, the more we eat of those sweet things, bigger dopamine release, and we're addicted.
Yes. It's the number one recreational drug out there. And then when you put that together with dairy and gluten, you've just got this trifecta opiate hit on the brain, right? I mean, I look at, like, what is the worst thing you can possibly do? And it's what we feed our kids, most of us, for breakfast, is cereal and milk. Like, think about just a bad, that's just a drug. I mean, that's like a terrible thing. And then expecting them to go concentrate in school.
And do well in school, yeah, yeah. So, what are some other key components of your program? You have different cycles?
Yes. I'm a very left brain algorithmic person. I love math. So, yes, I know. You probably suspected that. There, that girl's a math girl.
Well, I knew I liked you, but now I know why.
So everything I do has a framework, but also because I think it makes it very simple to follow. And if you tell someone, you know, it's just 7 days for this, it's 21 days for that, it's manageable. But the big thing that I do is I created a program built around swaps. So there's multiple cycles in the program. The first cycle is the elimination part of it. But what I've done to make that so much easier is, instead of saying, hey, you're going to take these seven foods out, because people will, first of all, nature hates a vacuum. So if you pull those out, they're going to start going, now what can I put in its place? And oftentimes it could be even worse. So, you know, if you're drinking soy milk, let's switch to coconut milk. If you're having pasta, let's have like lentil pasta or spaghetti squash. So I've made simple swaps for all the most common foods, so you don't even miss them, because we're all creatures of habit. And yeah, once you get used to switching your soy milk for your coconut milk, or my gosh, there's this amazing almond ricotta cheese that I just found from Kite Hill that I'm like hooked on. So there's a lot of really easy resources now, way more than there used to be. So that's the first cycle. It starts with, I call it your personal discovery process. You talked about it before, about being a detective. Is it all starts with first looking at where you're at, because so many of the signs of food intolerance are things people think are their normal. And the big takeaway here is gas and bloating and joint pain and headaches and skin problems and getting sick frequently and having food cravings and not being able to lose weight, especially around your waist, and being hungry. Those are not normal. That's your body shouting out. And so often that can be food intolerance. If it's not 100% the cause, it can be a significant implicator in that. So I have you figure out where you're at now. Of course, do a body composition test. So weight, body fat if you can, and then waist and hip. And then the first 3 weeks, we pull out those seven foods. We do the swaps that I talked about. And then after that is this re-challenge phase. And that is really the exciting part, because that's where you're going to connect the dots between what you're eating and how you feel and what you weigh. And one by one, we go back and look at the high food intolerance foods, the high five foods. So gluten, dairy, soy, eggs are the key ones there. And it's not so that you're going to put these things back 100%. You know, it's just to say, okay, how do you feel when you eat gluten? Because if it triggers a really big response, you want to be hyper aware of everything. If it just, you know, says makes your fingers a little bit swollen, then you want to be careful with it. But if you got it in, you're not rushing to the hospital. So it really helps you figure out how vigilant you need to be with these different foods. And then I'll tell you, I think that the most forgotten, like the least sexy part of any program out there, is what's called a maintenance program. And that's probably why it's so not sexy. I mean, who wants to maintain? And I really think it's really about, now that you've gotten to this point, now you see what's possible. How do you make sure that you not only you don't get into a weight regain cycle, but that you just continue to get better and better and better? Because I believe I know at 52, I'm way better than I was at 42, and I intend to be better at 60. So I think that you can just continue to get better and better and better. So that's really what the third cycle is about, is how do you make sure that you don't ever do the backslide? And if you do, that you've got yourself all these strategies in place to pull you back out of it. And then how do you continue to get better and better and better? And one of the key secrets is, get around people who are better than you.
I love that.
Yes. Right? Think about it. If you're hanging out with a bunch of people who are obese and, cranky and negative, guess what you'll be? we know that obesity is contagious. But if you're hanging out with people who are fitter than you, healthier than you, and you're spending time with them, they're not sitting around on a Friday night having beer and pizza.
So, and if you have a group that's that you're with right now, and they fall into that less desirable, then you got to lift them with you, right?
Yeah. So what you want to do is see who wants to play and see who you're not going to be spending as much time with. But that's the bottom line. Is it's great to have a support group, and you may need to seek out some new people. There's so many online groups now, and because the obesity research was very interesting, the people, it didn't matter if the person was next door or across the country. So it's really about finding a super support group who you can work with, and then see who in your group now wants to come along with you, because having an accountability partner is huge for helping you up-level your health. I have accountability partners and support groups that I work with in all areas of my life.
That's great. You know, one thing I agree wholeheartedly with you is that I think long-term effective weight loss requires a good jump start. That first phase is really important to get that success cycle going. So what's your take on that? Do you think it's important?
I think it's critical. The studies actually show that it is. You know, for years, I was working with a gal who said, you know, in order to, you don't lose weight to get healthy, you get healthy to lose weight. And she was all about slow weight loss. And I was like, you know, people, that's not motivating. And we're working against all these diet plans that are telling you can lose, you know, 10 pounds in 2 weeks. But the research supports fast weight loss. Because if you get in and you lose a couple pounds right away, then you're in. Then you've seen some promise of results, and it's going to just be more exciting. But also, it shows that when people lose weight fast, they actually lose more weight overall, and they keep it off. Now, I will take it back to, say, a relationship. Think about a relationship. Now, this might be going way back for you, but if, like, let's say that you were dating. It's got to be exciting from the start. You know, it's like you can't start with someone, not really see any results, have a crappy couple dates and think, okay, I'm going to marry this person, you know. But if you start and it's really exciting for that starts that bond, and then you'll go long term. It's the same with weight loss. Weight loss is like dating.
Yeah. You know, as kind of a biochemist, I look at what happens with immediate weight loss, and it really does change our physiology and helps with that that fat burning mode. What are some things that you found that can really help people activate that fat burning machinery?
Number one is to get a 12 to 14 hour fast going. So stop eating like 3 or more hours before bed. And I have people eat within an hour or two in the morning. I don't like them going too long. I know a lot of intermittent fasting has you going till 12. Well, women get very mean when you do that to us. So, but I like the 12 to 14 hour fast, increasing water intake. I mean, there are so many simple things that you can do that make a massive difference. And water is one of them, in terms of, you know, you can boost your metabolism as much as 30% just by increasing your water intake. This is a simple little thing, you know? So increasing water intake, making sure that you're getting enough protein at each meal, because protein is more thermic, requires more to digest and adapt to. So protein, burst training. I'm a big proponent of burst style training, and that's short, all out exercise, like running up a flight of stairs and then walking down to recover and repeat to accumulate 4 total minutes of all out bursting. And then sleep. Sleep is so big. I mean, actually, if I had to pick just one thing above all else, if you said, what's the number one thing to help with your health and weight loss and everything else, it would be making sure that you're getting high quality sleep every single night.
Which is virtually impossible when people are insulin resistant. They are on that blood sugar roller coaster, and that means that they will go to sleep easily, but they wake up 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours later and have a hard time getting back to sleep. So if you want to take advantage of getting a good night's sleep, you got to get those blood sugar levels under control.
Yes. And that's one of the things too. One of the key parts of my program that I have people do is I have them journal so they can look back if they're, you know, ideally you can turn insulin resistance around fairly quickly with the diet, with getting better sleep, with stress management, with vitamin D. There's a lot of things, but I see one of the key determinants of whether someone's going to be successful on a program or not. Accountability partners, huge. Support community, huge. But the number one thing that I see as a differentiator is journaling. And I don't care whether you're writing it, you know, in a hard journal or you've got an app. It's that mere having to write it down, all of it. Good days, bad days, because people like to write the good days down and then don't want to write the bad day down. Kaiser Permanente did a study and they found that the people who journaled consistently versus those who were random lost twice as much weight.
Yeah. And so they're keeping track by journaling. They're keeping track of what they're eating and how they're feeling and what they're doing.
Yeah. And I have people do that. So I actually journal every single day. And it's I do goals and then whatever I'm working on at the time. So what I have people do in the program is they're writing down their goals. They're tracking their weight. Tracking weight, I used to tell people to do once a week. Now I tell people to do it every single day. The studies show that people who do that, especially when they move into a maintenance phase, have a much higher success rate because things are not going to get out of hand. You know, most of us, it's like we weigh once a week. And then if things start going downhill, you don't go near the scale. Well, that's, you need to have that alarm stage that tells you go back into, you know, go back and hit it hard and start journaling again, you know, have strategies in place. So weighing in every day is another key one. And you track that down in that journal. And then let's say you've got the food dialed in, then start working on dialing in the water, dialing in the sleep. So whatever thing you're working on, you know, what you measure, you can improve. And if you report it to other people, you improve it exponentially. So that's where that accountability partner or support group comes into play.
I love it. I love it. Well, I think we've really covered a lot of great information. It was really, really helpful. What an honor and privilege to have you on this summit, sharing all your wisdom, experience, and enthusiasm. If you like what you've heard today, you can go to jjvirgin.com. You can find out more about JJ and her philosophy. I think it's worth just going to your site and seeing, reading the story of Grant and then seeing your family so healthy and vibrant. I mean, that was just really touching. JJ is offering a free gift today, which is the Virgin Diet Jumpstart Guide. We've talked about how important it is to get on that road to success. This guide is going to help you do that. Anything else you want to tell us about the Jumpstart Guide?
The Jumpstart Guide is set out to get you into action immediately, easily. And the biggest thing that I see is right now you might be hearing this going, all righty, 7 pounds in 7 days I'm in. Take advantage of the excitement now to get started. And it is way simpler than you think.
Yeah, yeah, it has to be simple to be sustainable, I think. Very practical and useful information for all of us. So thank you again, JJ. We really appreciate you taking the time today. And I want to thank all of you listeners and viewers out there. Just a reminder, if you want to purchase the upgrade package, the price is discounted from $197 down to $97 right now. With the upgrade package, you'll be able to download and listen and view all of the great interviews that we've had. You can also get the transcripts of each talk, and you'll get access to all of the speakers' bonuses. You got a great one here. To order the Jumpstart Guide, just click on the order link below this recording. Once again, thank you for being a part of this Natural Medicine Healing and Wellness Summit and for making optimal health a priority in your life. I look forward to seeing you at the next training. God bless. Thank you.